This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. I'm Toni Quest. My friends call me TQ, and I'm so happy that you're here. And once again, I have one of the best and most interesting people I could find on the planet. Tonight, our guest is Nancy Seabold. She's a vocal coach. She's involved in music direction, theater direction, and she works with both adults and children. And I found her when I actually saw something that she did. You know, I'm not going to say where we were or what we were doing, but I saw her in action. I saw Nancy and I was amazed. I watched her take a group of about 12 strangers and teach them three-part harmony in 15 minutes. And then they were singing. And they couldn't believe they were doing it, but they were doing it. I think that has to do with some of the training and experience that you've had over the years. And I've been impressed with you ever since. And I'm so honored that you're coming on my show. So welcome. And tell me what's new. And tell me how you managed to take groups of strangers and teach them so quickly like that.
Thank you. And thank you for that nice introduction. Yeah, it's fun, isn't it? I mean, The nice thing about strangers is you really can just dive in like an improvisation. But sure, training certainly helps. I think also when you've seen what you can do with people and people's aptitude and joy in doing it, it's a great motivator. So it makes you brave.
Yes.
So, and it did, even though people weren't technically music people, they were artists. And I think artists tend to be a little bit like that. So that helps too.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But I love working with singers, and I've worked with about every age. As you say, I used to say from 8 to 80 when I did my little cabaret. I said 8 to 80. I did have one 80-year-old man, and he was phenomenal. But generally, they are younger and on average middle school students. That's a good age to start. But adults are great because they're great sports and they usually like to just dive in. How do I do it? A lot of it has to do with vocal technique and knowing what works. In that situation, it was kind of fun too, because I was using little phrases and thirds and things that are relatively easy because they're harmonic. So if you get people that can sing at all, you take a chance, because there's always somebody that cannot match pitches. But outside of that, which doesn't happen that often, believe it or not, because usually it's just lazy ear if somebody has it, and in a few sessions you can get them to a point where they can match pitches. But a lot about great singing starts with breathing, of course. And in that situation, there really wasn't time to give lessons about breath support and abdominal, you know, the whole thing with the diaphragmatic breathing. So honestly, when I cut to the chase, it's usually getting to real basic words, which I used in that situation. And if you go right for those vowels are a tremendous technique tip when you're teaching, because it's really what makes those words float and sustain. And people are always impressed when you can do a legato line.
What is legato? What does that mean?
That's a good question. So legato is sustained, and really the only difference, I mean, as people say, if you can speak, you can sing. But the biggest difference when we speak, it's kind of choppy, right? And very quick. We're known to speak very fast. In fact, when you hear the opera recitatives, which are still sung, but they're imitations of speech, they go very, very fast. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, you go into the kitchen and get something to eat, you know,
right.
Only it will be an Italian or something typically. But staccato is the opposite. So sometimes it's easier to teach the opposite first. And I'll typically ask a student to just let a note go. Well, first we'll start with breathing, and then I'll have them just let a note go without much thought of where it goes. And inevitably, people exactly know what to do with that. Just kind of let the sound drop. Mm-hmm. And part of it is knowing how to inhale. It's similar to when you were a kid, did you ever blow up a balloon?
Yes.
And then take the tip, you know, and you can actually make it sing by, you know, it's funny. I'm sitting here holding this phone and I almost dropped the phone because I started to demonstrate.
Demonstrate to the phone. Yes.
I won't do that. But you can actually make that balloon make a tone, right? And so it's a similar concept because the lungs basically are filling up with air, much like the balloon does. And you wouldn't want to, when you make that balloon expand, you wouldn't want to put it to the point that it has no strength, right?
Right.
So similar in singing, if they can find those diaphragmatic muscles, so it's like taking a breath. And, you know, before you know, I'll be giving you a lesson with this. Mm-hmm. But in a way, it's kind of fun if people haven't done it. So you're taking a deep breath. And of course, it's much like in dance where you stand up straight, like they always talk about pulling the puppet from the top of the head.
Yes.
So I don't know how deeply you want me to go into this.
As deeply as you'd like to go into it.
Okay, well, that's a good answer. Every teacher loves that answer, right? So you would, you know, if you're in the studio now or if any listeners listening, you could try it. But if you stand squarely on both feet, so you always want to feel like your feet are rooted into the ground. And then if you pretend you're a puppet where you're pulling that puppet string up, it lines up the spine and you can see it in a mirror if you're looking sideways in a mirror, how it kind of brings your whole body in line. And that also allows the lungs to fully fill up with air, because as you know, if you hunch over, mm-hmm. there's not much space, right?
Right.
So if you think of yourself almost like, you know, when you hear the sound of a guitar, how you've got those strings over that hollow area. Well, part of the wonderful thing about phonation, if you can allow a lot of space in your lungs, and of course, there's ways of doing that even with your mouth, you've got all that wonderful hollow space for the vibrations to go around, right?
Yes.
So it's like, it's very vibrant, but it also is, you know, we sing on that air. So it's kind of like when you think, if you drew two dots, you probably did this in school. It's like, what is the shortest distance between the two dots, right? Well, the straight line. Mm-hmm. So the equivalent of that in singing, it's funny, I'm finding that I have to stand up to teach, even though here we are on the phone, which is kind of comical, but
I understand that. I find that if I don't sit up straight, my director, Jim, told me that it's better and I sound better when I'm sitting up straight as opposed to just like, you know, slouching in a chair.
Absolutely. In fact, my acting coach used to say, do not rehearse your lines sitting down and slouching because that's how you're going to deliver them. They won't have nearly the impact. But it was really a good point rehearsing, because if you're rehearsing incorrectly, then how do you think the performance will be, right? So if you get used to that, so feet planted in the ground, and then your shoulders should be back, not up. And that's another funny habit that singers, especially beginners, they'll sing high and their shoulders lift higher and higher. So your shoulders should be back. And then you just take a deep breath. And I have students, first we practice with, I actually direct it, so you're not seeing a video of this, but I encourage them first to take a normal breath with a sound. Like, have you ever done yoga with Ujjayi breathing? Okay,
yes.
So if you know, you go, it's kind of like a gasp. You're going, and if you exhale, it's kind of like, you know, when you go against a mirror. So the reason you do that for the beginning, just so they can hear how long they're actually inhaling and exhaling. So we can try it for a minute. Just try taking a nice deep breath and listen to the air. You don't want to go and just fill up all at once. So if you were watching me direct it, I would be conducting a nice long swoop, kind of like angel's wings. Like if you could kind of picture me wings out.
Yes.
Okay. So let's take a nice deep breath. And then exhale. Now, we don't spend much time on the exhaling because we want to work with the sound on that. So two things. Before we start to do that, I want to also have you feel where the abdominal muscles and that whole diaphragmatic thing happens. So if you take a deep breath and then inhale, mm-hmm. and it's almost a sensation of actually what's happening is that musculature between the lungs and underneath that is basically coming down. So it's like you could picture if there were, if the lungs really are like those air pockets or whatever, but if you picture the lungs almost like that balloon for the sake of it, the ease of thinking of that. And then as it fills up, of course, that balloon, if you were holding it adjacent to your body, would be going down as it fills up, right? Yeah, because it's just getting bigger and bigger. So inhale. Now exhale on a, just poorly, let go. An H-O. Yeah, no real support. Just let it go. Like a rag doll. Yeah, she's too good, see? Okay, so that was actually pretty good. So now, first of all, let's do a few staccatos. So the opposite of legato, of course, is staccato, which is very short. So from take a deep breath. Put your hand in front. It's odd not being able to see you because I'm so used to watching what the person's doing.
Right.
But you can put your hand on your belly and just inhale. Do you feel it?
Yep.
And then exhale. Now, also, you can put your hands on your back, and people don't realize, but that should expand too because your lungs should all open up. So put them in the back, same thing.
When you'd be standing.
So you're standing, and you can put your hands behind you on your back. Now, not everybody is flexible enough to do it. If you can't reach completely, just
and then
put
you can
them on
feel,
your
you
thigh.
Can actually feel your lungs expand.
Absolutely.
Even more so in the back.
Absolutely. You can feel them. Yes. And so now what we're going to do, we're going to take, and if I'd be at the keyboard, well, I guess I could walk over to the keyboard. So I would give you a C like, and you can go, ha, 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 ha. Now, notice before you try it, you don't want to go, see if you can hear the difference. This is the right way, the way I just did it. The wrong way would be from the throat. You hear it, right?
Yes.
It's like a lot of people do that. And then they get sore throats, they get really tight in the neck, and you want to keep your neck and head very loose. So if you take ha, 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 and then you sustain that, so the next thing to think of is a very pure vowel, because the thing about the two dots is the line that gives you the most reserve of breath is, of course, the more focused sound. So I like to think of it almost like unity consciousness. As your mind is thinking, oh, or ah, or e. So if I go, that's not a very good one because I'm not really focused.
Right.
But if I sing, if I get a note and I go,
that's high note. You have a high voice.
I could go on forever and ever holding that note because I'm holding a real specific vowel and I'm focused on it.
Yes. I remember being in chorus in junior high school and we were told how to stagger a note because not everybody could hold the note as long as the person next to you.
But when you're a soloist, you don't have that advantage.
Right.
So I remember the way that I learned that most was that when I used to sing the Rejoice from the Messiah, has like practically a page where you're holding that note through all of those gazillion notes singing Rejoice. And I listened to recording upon recording and I thought, now why does this, how is it that this artist can hold all the way through to the end and this one cannot? And what I started to notice is the one who could not did not have as pure and as true a sound to that vowel.
Oh.
Yeah. And so the other thing is where it gets complex is English is complex because, of course, if you say the word night, say that word.
Night.
Okay. But when you sing it, we say night, just like you did. When you sing it, you have to find the main part of the vowel. So it's na-ah, right? Ah, the whole way until you're ready for the consonant and the next beat. So the consonant, it's kind of like, remember that game in school, kids would tap their head fast and then you do the belly round in a circle slowly.
Yeah.
Well, it's like those two things happening at once because every time you hit a consonant, it should be hard and fast, whereas the vowel needs to sustain and be very homogeneous and elongated, right? So like, night. So the ah is what sustains in the ET. So it sounds very picky, but what's cool about it, as you learn to do that naturally, no matter if you're singing high or, you know, night, you know, and I'm just purposely bumping it. But the point is that you get this tremendous strength to carry through lines because you're focused on the vowel. And then also the nice thing is it projects and it's very strong. So that if you're in a theater singing for hundreds of people, that's why in opera, they don't even use microphones.
Wow.
And a lot of people don't realize that. Those enormous voices, what's so surprising and amazing about them is there's no mic.
That is amazing. I've been to some opera houses. That's a lot of space to fill.
A lot of space and a lot of sound comes out of those bodies. So that's their training. They've been trained to project and to sing those long, incredible lines. So what happens is just like anything, you build your muscles and you get stronger and stronger at doing that. And that's the benefit to studying because you have somebody guide you along the way.
Now, do you work with just singers? I know that I've approached you about public speaking because there is, I'll say there's a strain. If you don't speak properly, if you don't sit properly, you can get this interesting kind of strain that happens in the muscles around your neck.
Absolutely.
And I know it's from singing from the throat and not singing from the diaphragm, which would be the solar plexus, the diaphragm, or the sacral?
It's that, well, a couple of things are going on that you're talking about, which is interesting. And you know what came to my mind right away? Have you ever talked to an older person who's maybe been hospitalized, but especially an older person? I remember my dad when he was very ill toward the end. I used to have such a hard time listening to him because it just hurt me to think of what he was doing to his voice because he had no musculature. His whole middle, the core, so to speak, I like to think of it as the core, muscles were all gone. So everything was out here. And he just had to struggle to get that sound out.
Mm-hmm.
I know all of the physiological things to it, but I'm not one to, I find that if you start talking that way, what happens? Just like, you know, you can explain why it's harder to sustain an oh and an ooh and what's happening inside of your mouth. And sometimes on rare occasions, I will say that, but I find that, you know, it'd be kind of like somebody saying, okay, now when you go to walk up the stairs, you lift this leg muscle and then you push your leg forward. I mean, can you imagine? I'd be tripping.
They say if you think about it too much, you're sure to trip over your feet and fall.
Exactly. So I find much more success with people focusing on those vowels, understanding when they're used. And I can see it. I can see it and hear it to know what to tell them to work on if they're not doing it properly.
So have you been working with students on Zoom like during this COVID time? Because a lot of people are a little apprehensive about even being in person at all. I had somebody advise me to do everything virtually except for people that I really know, you know, very well and know that they're, I don't say safe to be around, but appropriate to be around. So how are you working these days? You working on Zoom?
Yeah, not Zoom though. I do only work online because you're absolutely right. I mean, it is the most contagious thing. And you couldn't even teach proper voice if you did, because the whole thing is that you have to do those plosives. And as we all know that, you know, that definitely it's almost like a sneeze. In fact, I'll never forget when I went to see Forbidden Broadway. It was a small theater and there were people who had been working on Broadway and you could, it sounds gross, but you could literally see the spit flying in the air because they were so, the expletives, everything was so, you know, it's very strong because when you're on a stage, everything has to be exaggerated.
Yes.
But I wanted to answer the first half of your question and I've sidetracked myself. You said, well, it was a very good question. What did you just ask?
I asked if you're working in person and you do lessons via Zoom, because sometimes you get, if you don't have an excellent connection, there could be a delay.
Yes. No, Zoom for that reason just does not work. If you were doing a class, you could do it like little kids, because as you know, kids learn songs through call respond, where I sing, you know, three little mice in the closet went, whatever, and they have to imitate it back. But the reason with the sophisticated students that I'm working with, it doesn't, is, exactly, that lag, and you kick each other out. So the thing, unbelievably, that works is FaceTime.
Oh.
Fortunately, all of my students except for one had iPhones. So it was very, very helpful. And you still have a little bit of a lag, but you learn to work with it because all it is that I can sing or play to demonstrate. Sometimes we can do over each other, very little, but you learn how to kind of go with the flow of that. But if I'm doing just one thing, like what I'll do is maybe give a framework rather than playing like a whole line, because otherwise it would be kicking them out.
Okay.
So you learn sort of that rhythm, and it's actually more about me than them. I just have to adapt to that, and then they just know to sing, and then I can hear them and give them feedback. You know, it's nothing's ever going to feel like being in person. However, we've gotten spoiled, and I have students that I was working with at Pace down in Pleasantville that, what a wonderful thing, because I can still work with them. And one is way up north, and another's down in Virginia. You know, there's definitely advantages. But the other nice thing about Apple has been that they've now made it so that if you're on Android, that you can use it.
Oh.
I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's something new that's just happened. And what they do is they can send a link. Now, of course, people can also work if they have an iPad. It doesn't have to be a phone. But now this thing with Android also works, because what happens, you send them a link and then it hooks up with you.
So what clientele are you working with now? Are you working with stage performers, professional singers, regular people, public speakers, or all of the above?
All of the above over different periods of time. Speakers less, because what I found is that if you teach them the basics of singing and they do some of that, they basically can apply it. But I have worked with people trying to do acting who want to do an audition, and they're working on a monologue, and there's places they have to make their voices stronger that they were struggling with. Or another one, it's very hard to sing. I'm going to start speaking really quietly. If I still focus in on the vowels, you should be able to understand what I'm saying. Some people, when they talk softly, everything gets all mushed together like this.
Yeah,
you
right.
Can't necessarily. It's hard to demonstrate, but because I've had many of these students for some time, they are more sophisticated now, and many of them are auditioning for NISMA, which is like the New York State, I don't want to say competition, because it's really like a self-grading process, but you have to do sight reading, and then there are different levels, and then you have corresponding songs. And this is the time of year, actually, that becomes very active. So even students that maybe dropped for a while because things were a little intense at the beginning of this school year, too, as you know, where they're overwhelmed because a lot of them have had to go back online. And it's just difficult on kids today. But then I have some that are truly professionals. So the one that I mentioned to you in Virginia, he's now getting hired to do operas and different things. So it's really exciting. And he started. It was interesting. He came to me saying he was an actor and that's what he wanted to do. And then he opened his voice to sing because he said, well, you know, there's these little Shakespearean parts where they sometimes sing or different things. And I said, oh, my goodness, get singing. Let's go move on from there. So, yeah, he's moved on to even singing opera.
I can imagine that you teach a lot of people, you know, in different walks of life. I'm thinking that I saw a religious service recently at a Jewish temple. And, you know, sometimes you go to a funeral, whatever reason I was there. But, you know, there's a cantor, you know, and sometimes the rabbi will actually sing. So, which I think is, and it's, I'm wondering, where do they just automatically have that voice? And even in the Catholic Church, too.
Yes. Well, those are big jobs, actually. And they are many times hired from musicians. Well, they generally are. But you usually have to have, you know, in some cases, doctor's affinity or whatever the specific, you know, thing would be. In fact, when people ask me for recommendations for teachers or piano teachers or an accompanist or and then other people asking me for other singers, I'll always refer them to church musicians or temples or whatever, because those people, especially the big ones. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a little less so today because, you know, choirs are smaller, budgets are smaller, but there's always a professional director there that usually knows people.
Yeah, I've noticed that usually certain churches, certain synagogues, certain religious organizations or places of worship, they often have a choir more often than not, and there's there are always some voices in there that are extraordinary. I'm thinking about famous people who got their start in the church. Whitney Houston is a famous one. That's where she started singing.
Well, I got my initial training that, I mean, I did study because I was singing all over the house, and my sister, you know, I was like age 8, and my sister said, "Mom, Dad, give her lessons."
Oh, okay.
I did my first recital for hundreds of people when I was like 8 years old because this woman was very well known. But yes, the reason that is with the churches, do you know, can you guess why it would be as opposed to like nightclubs or something? I mean, I know it sounds silly.
I mean, I think there's some passion involved in some cases, but you know, there are hymns. There are hymns that go back for centuries.
Yes, but what I was going to get at, churches and these big institutions are some of the last traditional places that use classical music as the basis. So even, you know, some of those anthems and things are written by classical composers or, well, in the hymns too. Some of them are, you know, right out of symphonies, not all, but yeah, they're class more classically based. And because I do think there is a spiritual overtone too, because I don't know if you've done any study on the sacred sounds.
A little bit.
But just intoning, fascinating field, but you intone the different vowels. And oh, I have a wonderful book. It's called Sacred Sounds, actually. And each vowel has a different corresponding thing that it is healing for.
It has a sacred vibration.
Yeah, sacred vibration, exactly. And you can actually, I used to go to clinics and teach cancer patients because disease is really dis-ease. And what does singing do? You gain that ease, that flow of the singing, which stimulates the body, and psychologically and spiritually, it centers you too. So I sometimes say unity, certainly not meaning religious, but it is very healing. And it has almost like it does have a very spiritual feeling. So however you want to define that, but it's, you know what it is? It centers you, because if you think about it, if you're thinking a tone and you're focusing on that, it's almost like you can picture projecting that out over the crowd or for you into the microphone.
Right.
It centers you.
Yeah, I think that there, and we talked about this a little bit before this interview, is I believe that there's a part of your insides. That's why I mentioned like this, the chakras, like the sacral chakra and the solar plexus. I really feel that in order to be able to get up and sing in front of people, which it takes some nerve. You know, the reason I was very interested in singing basically is because I'm a public speaker. And there are those times when you feel this little edge of, I don't want to say intimidation, but I think it's an edge of fear that you're going to mess something up. But when you sing, it's you develop some sort of, I want to say a spiritual confidence to get up there and sing that song, especially if it has meaning to you. Now, when you do vocal coaching and you also do career coaching with regard to music, I understand that. I believe that public speakers should all take a singing class.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
It would be very useful. And the other reason is it's a focus thing, not just on vowels and whatever, but it is knowing certain techniques. Like, for example, you've heard the proverbial thing where a tenor, usually it's, of course, a high voice, but a tenor could crack. Well, that's devastating if their sounds crack.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If you have good technique, you never crack because you know that it sounds like such a funny term, but it diffuses, as you know, and you lose that line and it's embarrassing. So I'll never forget, there was a girl at Kent Place. She was, all the kids thought she had the best voice in the world, but she'd never had a lesson. And they asked her to sing in front of the whole student body. And I felt so sorry for her because she got up in front of the crowd. She went to sing like she always does. And her voice kept cracking and all these things happened. And I thought, how sad that no one ever gave her a lesson, because if you know the technique, so what happens, part of the thing of not being afraid is if you're out there, if your mind is focusing on creating that sound or whatever it is you are doing, acting helps too. Because if you're playing the part of a person, of course, you're not thinking of, you're kind of out of body already.
Right. Yes.
And another character. So that's how that helps. So there's that aspect, the character, but there's also the technical aspect. If you have a difficult passage, what happens to the novice or somebody who's never really had training is, of course, they're thinking, how do I sound? Oh my goodness, I'm going to make a mistake or whatever. Whereas if you have that technique, your mind is on doing those ropes that help you to fly with it, so to speak.
I think, though, if you're practicing it and you're used to hearing yourself sing it, I've seen people perform and they felt really confident. And I would ask her, I guess you got to do a lot of practicing to sing this song, National Anthem, you know, which is a tough one. And they'd be like, well, I know the words. I got it down. I know the words. I don't need to do it. And then when they get up there, you can hear that they have not practiced. You know, you can hear there's a voice there, but they have not practiced at all.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that when you perform, and that's where beginners again really have a problem, because they are not experienced enough to know that what you just did at home so easily is going to happen on the stage. And you hit it on the head, Tony. That's exactly the solution. Because if you practice enough, it's so in your muscle memory. I mean, I've heard, I hate to think of it this way, because we all like to think those characters on a stage are in the moment. But there are some, I've heard Broadway people say that sometimes they're in a show and they can literally, it's almost like they are out of body. They can let it, the muscle memory just kind of takes over. And I'm sure it's not completely, or we wouldn't have a good show. But they talk about, you know, their grocery list, they're thinking other things. Now, to me, that's kind of crazy. It's real extreme. But it does point out that muscle memory and that repetitive practice really does pay off. So I certainly don't recommend people are thinking of something completely different, but it is powerful.
So practice makes perfect, even in this. You know, I know that muscle memory, it translates to all kinds of artistic things, you know, drawing, painting, and everything.
Piano students I've had too. I had a piano student who, she was one of these rare people where I'd give her a piece and I'd expect her maybe to do the first few pages, because she was doing flute and ballet as well as academically strong. And she would come in and she'd have everything memorized. And I said, no, wait, tell me what you did. Well, she practiced, you know. I have a friend to this day, she practiced, this is extreme, and you couldn't do it in voice, but she practices 5 to 8 hours a day when she can.
Yeah, we know people like that. And some people do that, do it because they know they have to in order to come up, because it's their livelihood. Well, I got to tell you, though, I want to have you back on and maybe on a Zoom call. Maybe we could get someone else in here and they could be, it doesn't have to be me necessarily, but I really believe that singing does something from the inside. There's something about singing and being able to sing those notes and stand up and do it. I can attest to the fact that what you're saying about muscle memory is right. It's kind of like, you know, a song by heart, you can sing it. Every time you hear it on the radio, you're singing all the words. So promise me you'll come back to the cafe and that we'll talk again. How could the audience get in touch with you if they want to work with you?
Well, they can go to my site, nancysiebold.com, and there's a little link in there where they can send me an email with their information.
So that's how you can get in touch with the wonderful Nancy Siebold, and she'll teach you how to breathe. She'll teach you how to sing, you know, and I believe in what you do. I really do. I experienced it. And I just want to invite you back to come back to the Energy Stoners Cafe again, perhaps on Talk with TQ. We'll see you in person and we can work together on camera.
Sounds good, Tony.
And I'll say goodnight to the audience. And I thank you so much for coming to the show and listening again. Be safe. Be nice. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.